But if you close your eyes.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to This Week Again. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We're going to start off this show with the corrupt reason Donald gets to keep his Qatari hand-me-down jet. Move on to the Ozempic reason we're promised lower drug prices. And follow all of that up with whether or not U.S. judges are allowed to rule on issues of U.S. law. Let's begin, shall we? When we last left the stupidest tariff war ever, Fat Nixon was haggling down his own price from 145% on Chinese goods down to 29%. That's 80% off the original for those of you in the back. And just for shits and giggles, what does it say about threats made by the dude who started this dumbass shit in the first place, now that he's reducing his own tariffs to practically nothing? Wait, did he?
A temporary new trade agreement has been reached between the U.S. and China. The two countries announced the agreement in a joint statement shared by the White House.
Yesterday, we achieved a total reset with China. The talks in Geneva were very friendly. The relationship is very good.
The U.S. and China announcing they will dramatically reduce tariffs for 90 days while they continue to negotiate.
We have reached an agreement on a 90-day pause. I would imagine that in the next few weeks, we will be meeting again to get rolling on a more fulsome agreement.
With this China deal, the question is, what is it for and what did we gain?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that there's any gain for the United States here.
Of course not. Because China is the master winner when it comes to the game of chicken. All they had to do was sit back and let the retail CEOs do their thing. Complain about having to raise prices in order to continue having another record profit year to the lumbering lardass occupying the White House. While consumer confidence continues to crash like the stock market whenever the commander in American cheese discusses the economy. And like magic, tariffs are paused for 90 days. Americans can get their cheap Chinese goods they apparently cannot afford to live without, which also means American-based companies like Yum Brands from Kentucky won't have to take their is-this-really-food products to foreign lands overseas, and for good reason.
Taco Bell announced plans to open restaurants in Ireland, but officials there have one big concern.
They don't think the country's sewage system can handle it. This is a very serious challenge, Mike Jansen. Some infrastructure experts say it's already tough to serve all the houses in Ireland without adding the aftermath from Taco Bell diners. One person said it would be like giving Niagara Falls a laxative.
Oh, come on.
So people are now pressuring lawmakers to make building new waste treatment plants a top priority across the country.
Yeah, just for Taco Bell.
You know, Ireland really doesn't deserve to be washed away by some toilet ghoulies created by Fourth Meal. And I know Kentucky's pissed off now that Canada found a local and better tasting alternative to whatever they're calling whiskey. But that's no excuse for exporting IBS to a completely different country just to make up financial differences. And while we're on the subject of one man's trash is another man's treasure, Ronald Grump boarded Air Force One with toilet paper stuck to his shoe, heading to the Middle East where no one's going to extradite his diaper-covered ass. Destination UAE, Saudi Arabia, those guys who gave Jared Kushner $2 billion for no apparent reason back in the long-ago time of 2021. And because three is a magic number, we cannot forget Crimes the Clown's favorite desert getaway, Qatar. For no other reason than
The royal family of Qatar is giving a luxury jumbo jet to serve as Air Force One.
The Trump administration is poised to accept that luxury jumbo jet, which has a value estimated at $400 million, as a gift from the government of Qatar. The aircraft would be used by President Trump as a new Air Force One and then transferred to the Trump Presidential Library Foundation shortly before he leaves office.
A 13-year-old Boeing 747-8, known as a Flying Palace. The aircraft is larger and significantly more luxurious than the current Air Force One. The Qatari plane has two fully furnished floors, complete with flush carpet, leather couches, and two bedrooms.
It features the biggest master bedroom in the sky, as well as some very plush living quarters and several private offices. Some of the 9 bathrooms on board have full showers and even a bidet.
Qatar is considered an American ally, but it is also an ally of Iran and China and even Hamas.
I think that was a very nice gesture. Now, I could be a stupid person and say, oh, no, we don't want a free plane. We give free things out. We'll take one, too. I mean, I could be a stupid person and say, no, we don't want a free, very expensive airplane.
They're giving us a free jet. I could say, no, 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 don't give us. I want to pay you $1 billion or $400 million or whatever it is. Or I could say, thank you very much.
Or option 3, you suddenly remember that taking this plane from a foreign government is a violation of the Emoluments Clause of the United States Constitution. You know, that thing you swore to defend back in January? And you suddenly respectfully decline Qatar's offer because the U.S. Constitution is trying to prevent a foreign government from having influence over the executive branch of the United States. But in this timeline we find ourselves in, the 34 times convicted felon running the United States of America did exactly what you'd expect a criminal to do. He listened to the advice of Pick Me Bondi, Donnie Dunscap's premier ambulance chaser, who shocked absolutely no one when she said,
Attorney General Pam Bondi says the gift is, quote, legally permissible and not a bribe because Trump isn't giving Qatar anything in return.
We should point out that Bondi previously worked as a foreign lobbyist for the nation of Qatar.
Bondi worked as a foreign lobbyist for Qatar in 2020 and leading up to the 2022 World Cup. During this period, human rights organizations like Amnesty International were accusing Qatar of labor abuses involving migrant workers. Democratic senators raised concerns about Bondi's failure to disclose these ties during her confirmation process.
Your current position as a partner at the lobbying firm, you know, the work you've done for your Ballard partner clients, such as lobbying for the country of Qatar for $115,000 a month, why do you believe your work as a lobbyist does not constitute potential conflicts of interest?
Well, Senator, first, that was the amount my firm received. I believe multiple people represented the country of Qatar within my firm. I was registered as FARA along with many members of my firm.
Good for you. But, you know, it doesn't change the fact that our current U.S. Attorney General was previously employed as a foreign agent by the nation of Qatar through a legal firm that besties with Dolt 47. And you received $115,000 a month from Qatar to defend them during a time when they were accused of forcing migrants to build shit for the World Cup back in 2022. Qatar was stealing wages, providing dangerous working conditions, and demanding migrants shut up and keep building or else. And they hired Box Color Bondi to defend them. Hence why it's no surprise that she's all like, it's no biggie that my boss accepting a flying palace from Qatar, and that does not all violate the U.S. Constitution, because not like they got anything in return. And ignoring the Trump-branded golf course and hotel deal worth billions to Qatar and Erickstad that's coming soon to Doha. Because when it comes to blatant corruption at the highest level, the insider trading is coming from the DOJ.
Government documents showing that U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi sold at least $1 million worth of Trump media shares
the day the president announced sweeping tariffs.
On April 2nd, which was President Trump called it Liberation Day, where he announced that sweeping set of tariffs, Attorney General Bondi sold at least $1 million and up to what she said she had in December, which is about $4 million of Trump Media Company stock. That company owns Truth Social. She was a consultant on that project before the election and before she was named as Attorney General and confirmed earlier this year. And yes, traditionally you would divest that, but to do the divest shares, especially in the millions of dollars of something that belongs to President Trump, but I think you have to remember here, doing it on a day where the stocks tanked across the board, these stocks dropped about 10% before rebounding, certainly raises some questions.
Yeah, I mean, follow up to that, I mean, we're talking insider trading here potentially, correct?
You are correct, ma'am. Or as Marjorie Traylor Greene calls it, buying the dip. Now, the D-average attorney general was supposed to get rid of that stock in her boss's company before she started her current job. But if she had, she wouldn't have that extra cheese she got from manipulating the stock market now, would she? A timeline of events that looks sus to quite a few people in Congress who would love to investigate the fuck out of Pammy's adventures in insider trading if more Dems are elected in the next round of midterms. Until then, we'll just have to settle for the punchline to this whole Qatar giving America's fraud father a big-ass plane. And here is MSNBC's Chris Hayes to give it to us.
The $400 million private jet that the government of Qatar gifted to Donald Trump, it was initially designed back in 2012 for the former Qatari prime minister. But it sounds like the expensive jet was just more trouble than it's worth. According to a new report in Forbes, quote, while many have speculated the Qataris have offered Trump the luxurious plane to curry favor with the famously transactional president, there may be a simpler rationale. They just don't want it anymore. The royals have failed to sell the plane, which was put on the market in 2020. Giving it away could save Qatar's rulers a big chunk of change on maintenance and storage costs. Making Trump happy would be an added bonus. See, it turns out no one wanted to buy Qatar's hand-me-downs. In fact, the planes are so difficult to get rid of that one aviation blog actually called it way back in 2020 when the Qataris first put this jet up for sale. Quote, I can't imagine Qatar will find a buyer for this plane, so one has to wonder who this 747-8 will be gifted to. Well, looks like Qatar finally found a sucker to pawn it off to.
But wait, there's more to the story. Grandpa Tangerine gets a hand-me-down nobody wanted, and the American taxpayer has some new bills we can't afford to pay now that the Republicans have unveiled their big, beautiful plan to give billionaires even more tax cuts.
The House is moving forward on President Trump's so-called big, beautiful bill.
President Trump's nearly $4 billion budget package. The bill includes extending President Trump's 2017 tax cuts. It also includes cuts to Medicaid and food stamps.
And the theory here is that the GOP can save some money in the gigantic budget bill. There are a lot of spending items in there, and they want to claw some revenue back. They can save some money by adding work requirements to Medicaid.
This is where we'll see those cuts come from. It will require either people on the program prove that they are either working, they're in school, or they're volunteering for at least 80 hours a month.
And they simply don't understand why a 63-year-old factory worker who's been breaking his back for 40 years lifting heavy equipment can't just go out and get a new job when he gets laid off. This bill gives that worker 90 days to figure it out before he goes hungry.
About 44% of all the people enrolled in Medicaid are living in congressional districts that are represented by Republicans. It's 36.8 million people.
By 2034, this bill would take health insurance away from 8 million people. So you can see from the math there that, like, maybe, you know, 10% of the people currently covered by Medicaid are working age adults.
They're cutting health care for 13.7 million Americans, the largest cut to health care in U.S. history, to give tax cuts to billionaires and to big corporations.
And it says that in the calendar year 2027, someone that's making less than $15,000 will see an increase in federal taxes by 18.7%. And then in calendar year 2020, anybody making less than $15,000 sees an increase of 53.5%. Anybody who's making $15,000 to $30,000 sees an increase by 11.7%. In 2031, anyone making less than $15,000 sees a... Check this out. I thought this was a mistake. I thought I was not reading this correctly. An increase in their taxes of 74.3%.
And what in the poor people can't afford shit makes the Republicans think now they can afford to pay a tax increase of over 74%. These fucknuts have really lost their minds with this big, beautiful piece of shit that they're calling a budget. Tax increases over 10 years on the poorest Americans, forcing Meemaw and Peapaw to go to work just so they can receive Medicare. And is this what maggots voted for? Because I remember Denture Don promising prices would come down day one, and it's been 118 days so far, and they're still going up. I also remember promises about no tax on tips and overtime. So what's the big, beautiful bill got to say about that?
Okay, on tips. The president has said, your tips will be 100% yours. Does this tax bill continue the payroll tax on people's tips?
Yes, it does, Mr.
Overtime. The president said, your overtime will be tax-free. Does this bill continue the payroll tax on overtime?
It does not exempt overtime from the payroll tax.
The president has said he's going to remove taxes on Social Security. Does this bill remove taxes on Social Security benefits?
The legislation provides an increased exemption amount.
But does it remove taxes on Social Security benefits as promised by the president?
Does not change Social Security.
Well, well, well. Seems Al-Qaeda was fooled once again. Because those tips and overtime are gonna get taxed along with your Social Security. But please, tell me again how you're willing to go through some initial financial ruin for the good of all billionaires' profit margins. Thankfully, Dems during committee hearings have been wasting no time reminding the American public what's really in this pro quo to the wealthy masquerading as a budget proposal. Exposing facts like Republicans want to redefine what a dependent is by cutting off rights to SNAP after the ripe old age of 7 fucking years old, so they can give more money to their rich donors by denying children and their parents food. And apparently, all that smoke combined with constituents flooding the phones and inboxes of their elected officials with you better fucking not vote for that shit kind of messages worked. Because when it came time to vote on that big, beautiful bill in the House Ways and Means Committee, this happened.
And we have breaking news. A bill full of President Trump's key priorities is facing an uncertain future after Republicans failed to advance it out of committee. And that's despite pressure from the president himself.
President Trump earlier today posting to Truth Social saying Republicans must unite behind the one big, beautiful bill. We don't need grandstanders in the Republican Party. Stop talking and get it done.
It wasn't enough for 5 Republican hardliners on the House Budget Committee who just voted to reject this big sweeping piece of legislation. All of President Trump's campaign promises that have some kind of legislative component compiled into one, what Republicans up here on the Hill call big, beautiful bill.
2 key votes came from these Republican Congress members, Representative Ralph Norman and Chip Roy. They are 2 conservatives who say the cuts don't go far enough. Other Republican no votes came from Representatives Clyde and Breachin.
For Roy specifically, he wanted to see deeper cuts to the program. He also argued that this failed to address reversing some of the tax credits that were delivered under the Biden administration as part of the Inflation Reduction Act. He's asking for those to be eliminated.
What the fuck, Chip Roy? Proving everything, including the douchebags, are bigger in Texas with that stealing everything from the poorest Americans over the next 10 years just isn't enough for me shit. And with that being said, me and the rest of the country will take your no vote. Thoughts and prayers to all the rest of you who will be going back to whatever rock you crawled out from under to discover new and insipid ways to fuck over your constituents so your donors can buy a new yacht. And while we're on the subject of supporting the broke-ass billionaires in America, Jabba the Gut recently decided to take medical advice from the brainworm that he appointed to run HHS, even though...
You know, I don't want to seem like I'm being evasive.
Yeah.
But I don't think people should be taking advice, medical advice from me.
Too bad. Mambo Mussolini had a quarter pounder stuck in his ear when the brainworm said that to Congress, because now we've got to deal with the rebranded and definitely altered drug pricing deal President Biden previously negotiated. Kind of like how old Yam Tits took the NAFTA trade agreement President Clinton did like 1,000 years ago and then renamed it as the USMCA so he could say things like, "Hey, I did something on trade," during his first regime. So now we've got the brainworm and Fat Nixon regurgitating something we already had while making it a fuck ton worse.
We're going to have a very, very big announcement to make, like as big as it gets, and I won't tell you on what.
1 week later.
President Trump just announced that prescription drug and pharmaceutical prices will be reduced by 30 to 80% almost immediately. This appears to be the major announcement that the president has been teasing for days.
But it's called Most Favored Nation. We are going to pay the lowest price there is in the world. Whoever is paying the lowest price, that's the price that we're going to get. So remember that. So we're no longer paying 10 times more than another country. We're all going to pay the same. We're going to pay what Europe's going to pay. We're going to all pay. What we're doing is equalizing. There's a new word that I came up with, which I think is probably the best word. We're going to equalize.
Oh, man. Did Genghis Khan claim that he came up with the word equalize? Because somebody should dig up the Irish poet Edmund Spenser, who came up with the word equalize back in 1590. Seriously, folks. Will no one in the Trump regime read to the dear leader? Or am I assuming too much? Can any of you read? Because while it never gets old pointing out just how intellectually challenged Pumpkin Spice Palpatine is on any day ending in Y, there is a big reason why Save-A-Lot Stalin decided to lower the cost of pharmaceutical drugs in America, and it's not the reason you think. But I'll let President Quarter Pounder explain.
Ozempic costs 10 times more in the United States than in the rest of the developed world. 10 times more. Why? Why? What did we do? I mean, I'll tell you a story. A friend of mine who's a businessman, very, very, very top guy. Most of you would have heard of him. A highly neurotic, brilliant businessman, seriously overweight. And he takes the fat shot drug. And he called me up and he said, President, he used to call me Donald, now he calls me President, so that's nice respect, but he's a rough guy, smart guy, very successful, very rich. I wouldn't even know how we would know this, but because he's got comments. President, could I ask you a question? What? I'm in London and I just paid for this damn fat drug I take. I said, it's not working. He said, I just paid $88, and in New York, I pay $1,300. What the hell is going on?
So, who is this mysterious and overweight friend from New York that you have never mentioned until now? Because from where I'm standing, it looks like you're quite rotund and a New Yorker who's at least paper rich, which is probably why you're complaining about the cost of Ozempic. Just like any broke-ass billionaire would. But hey, we can all pretend you're lowering the cost of drugs for some other reason, if it makes you happy. And while we're on the subject of healthcare, what the actual fuck is going on in Georgia?
Adriana Smith is being kept alive by machines because she's pregnant.
30-year-old Adriana Smith was about 9 weeks pregnant when she started having bad headaches in February. April Newkirk says her daughter went to Northside Hospital for help.
They gave us some medication, but they didn't do any tests. Didn't do any CT scans. If they did, they would have caught it.
The next morning, Adriana's boyfriend noticed something was terribly wrong.
She was taken to Emory, Decatur, and then she was transferred here.
To Emory University Hospital.
They did a CT scan and she had blood clots all in her head.
Doctors declared Adriana brain dead.
In Georgia, Smith is no longer a person. She is now a vessel, and her family can do nothing about it. The state's abortion ban only allows abortion after 6 weeks in very limited cases, like a medical emergency that threatens the mother's life or causes substantial and irreversible physical impairment. But since she's just a vessel, her life is no longer at risk, so she doesn't qualify for the exceptions. Georgia's abortion law demands that even in death, her womb must serve as an incubator.
Now, 21 weeks pregnant, her baby's health uncertain.
She's pregnant with my grandson, but my grandson may be blind, may not be able to walk, wheelchair bound. We don't know if he'll live once she has him.
Her family says that the fetus has developed fluid on the brain, with doctors warning of possible severe disabilities if the child survives. In Georgia, Smith is not a woman with rights. Smith is an incubator.
And with that, let me be the first to welcome you to Gilead, formerly known as the state of Georgia. Because just like The Handmaid's Tale, Season 5, Episode 3, we have a pregnant black woman being kept in a hospital as an incubator because she was pregnant when she died. That's right, dearies. Adriana Smith died last February, but the state of Georgia is keeping her body going on machines because of a fetus, and there's nothing her family can do about it. The state of Georgia couldn't give two shits that this fetus is not viable, may not live very long once it's born, or may need round-the-clock care her family cannot afford if it does live. To Georgia, the lawmakers who wrote the heartbeat bill and the voters who put those bastards in power, Adriana's life means nothing, along with the fetus inside her, because have you seen Georgia's social programs? No? Well, that's because they don't give a fuck once the child is born, just that it is. Quite a message to send to every woman in Georgia, especially black women, when at a time the Trump regime is welcoming the spawn of white South African apartheid to America as refugees.
After pausing virtually all refugee admissions for those fleeing war and famine, the Trump administration is now planning to welcome one group, white South Africans.
You may recall that on the day he was sworn in president, Trump signed an executive order, effectively stopping any refugees from being allowed to come and resettle in the United States. But just a few weeks later, President Trump announced that he was making an exception, and not only that, he would expedite the processing of refugee claims by one group of people from Africa.
The president signed an executive order in February calling them victims of unjust racial discrimination from the country's black majority. White South Africans arriving as refugees at Dulles Airport outside Washington today on a plane chartered by the State Department, a process that usually takes years.
They are Afrikaners, descendants of Dutch settlers to South Africa.
Welcome. Welcome to the United States of America. We respect what you have had to deal with these last few years. We respect the long tradition of your people and what you have accomplished over the years.
It's a genocide that's taking place that you people don't want to write about, but it's a terrible thing that's taking place. And their land is being confiscated in South Africa. Farmers are being killed. They happen to be white. But whether they're white or black makes no difference to me. I don't care about their race, their color. I don't care about their height, their weight.
Oh, well, we do know you care about somebody's weight, President Ozempic. But as far as these pearly white descendants of the Dutch who colonized South Africa back in 1652 and until 1994 had control of the nation's politics and agricultural lands, they ain't no refugees. They are the children of people who stole those lands and committed genocide against the native peoples of South Africa for like 342 years. And just because those lands have been rightfully returned to their original owners, these pasty colonizers are somehow victims and need to be brought to America where they can take over our farmland? And by the way, no one wants to learn Dutch so they can order a taco, so these privileged migrants better stop complaining about speaking English all the time, because you're in America now. Be glad you're not a darker shade of melanin. Otherwise, you'd have to compete on the Running Man reboot for immigrants DHS is apparently considering.
The Department of Homeland Security is in talks with a reality TV show producer about a game show where immigrant contestants would compete for U.S. citizenship.
The Journal's report quotes a Department of Homeland Security spokeswoman who confirms that the idea is being considered, and she has spoken to the producer who pitched it.
Immigrants, it's a big part of why many of them come to this country. What they actually want is a pathway to U.S. citizenship that doesn't require a rose ceremony or a dance-off.
What are the stakes? How does this work? If you lose, what happens? And if you win, what happens?
Everybody on our show is going to be a future American. They are all great candidates to be future Americans. They're all at some place in the process and somewhere in line, just like I was. I'm offering the chance to skip to the front of the line. It's not the Hunger Games. I want everybody to understand the process. By the way, most Americans can't pass a basic civics test. And I want to bring people born in America to face off against our future Americans and see how well they would do. Because guess what? Most people can't.
And that word salad was brought to you by the creatively inept mind that gave us such brain rot as Duck Dynasty and being naked. And of course, the lip filler McGee running DHS could not pass up an opportunity to be on national television, pimp out people her department kidnapped off the street just so they could compete in a Stephen King dystopian game show knockoff. Wait a minute, did Mr. Beast put this guy up to this? Either way, folks, this is so batshit crazy, it almost makes sense. What with the Trump regime's top ambulance chaser trying to convince the former Supreme Court that we don't need nationwide injunctions getting in between Schittler and his campaign to make America white only.
Today, the Supreme Court justices are considering an issue, the fact that one judge anywhere in the U.S. can block a policy for the entire country. These are called nationwide injunctions. And this case today comes to the Supreme Court as a result of a challenge to his executive order ending birthright citizenship. That is the right that you are a U.S. citizen if you are born here, even if the parents that you are born to are not U.S. citizens. Because what happens in this case could determine how quickly and effectively he can implement his agenda through executive orders.
These district judges are not just doing universal injunctions. They're finding these actions illegal because they're exceeding existing authority.
Did I understand you correctly to tell Justice Kagan that the government wanted to reserve its right to maybe not follow a Second Circuit precedent, say, in New York, because you might disagree with the opinion?
Our general practice is to respect those precedents, but there are circumstances when it is not a categorical practice. It is, and that is not
this administration's practice or the longstanding practice of the federal government?
As I understand it, longstanding policy of the Department of Justice, yes, that we generally, as it was phrased to me, generally respect circuit precedent, but not necessarily in every case.
Does every single person that is affected by this EO have to bring their own suit? Are there alternatives? How long does it take? How do we get to the result that there is a single rule of citizenship that is the rule that we've historically applied rather than the rule that the EO would have us do?
How is this going to work? What do hospitals do with a newborn?
The federal officials will have to figure that out.
How?
So you could imagine a number of ways that the federal officials could.
Such as?
We don't know because the agencies were never given the opportunity to formulate the guidance. They would have 30
They're only going to have 30 days to do this, you think? They can get it together in time?
You're losing a bunch of cases. This guy over here, this woman over here, you know, they'll have to be treated as citizens, but nobody else will. Why would you ever take this case to us? In a case in which the government is losing constantly, there's nobody else who's going to appeal. They're winning. It's up to you to decide whether to take this case to us. If I were in your shoes, there is no way I'd approach the Supreme Court with this case. This is not a hypothetical. This is happening out there, right? Every court has ruled against you.
And yet, here we are. Under the guise of birthright citizenship, the Trump regime's primo de-average lawyer said with his whole chest that nationwide injunctions are an overreach. And if someone in America wants to take an issue up with the government, they should sue. Each and every one of them. In other words, like in the example brought by Justice Kagan, if a president decides to take every American gun owner's gun, each individual gun owner would have to sue the government to get it back. And once all gun owners sued, then perhaps the Supreme Court could hear each individual case to decide if any of those Americans should get their gun rights back. Or, in the scenario proposed by Bill Kavanaugh, the state your child was born in may recognize their citizenship, but if you travel to another state, they may not. And now your summer vacation destination just became an illegal immigration issue and you're looking at being deported to Libya or Rwanda. Which explains why Stephen Cosplaying Penis Miller said this recently to reporters when asked why his boss can't take the hint that the judiciary isn't going to just let him dictator all over this country.
The Constitution is clear, and that, of course, is the supreme law of the land, that the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus can be suspended in a time of invasion. So I would say that's an option we're actively looking at. Look, a lot of it depends on whether the courts do the right thing or not.
Wow, that was White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller suggesting that the administration would suspend habeas corpus if it disagrees with how the courts are ruling on immigration cases, arguing the president alone has the authority to revoke this country's bedrock legal right.
Habeas corpus is a form of asking for relief from a court where you're essentially asking for a release of a body. Conventionally speaking, it just means that you're asking to be released from custody. This is something that all sorts of people who've been caught up in immigration proceedings have been asking for lately, like the Alien Enemies Act cases.
They appear to want this fight. And you heard Stephen Miller in a somewhat Orwellian manner say that, well, this depends on whether courts do the right thing, meaning the thing that they want. They want rulings in their favor, or else he is threatening to suspend the writ of habeas corpus and to basically, you know, deport more people without a hearing.
As you know, ability of somebody to challenge their rights in courts is a pretty essential part of the rule of law. So certainly raising a lot of eyebrows with that comment.
Time a president has done it unilaterally without the authorization of Congress was Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War.
And if we're being honest, the Trump regime's chief of staff, Insel Miller, is actually mantraming over the fact that the United States is a nation built on the rule of law, not the rule of Jenny Penn. And in this country, courts get to decide whether or not the law is legal and whether or not anyone is violating it. For example, after this week's shenanigans at the SCOTUS, 7 out of 9 came together to tell Trader Orange that he cannot continue issuing deportations under the Alien Enemies Act of so fucking long ago. He cannot use this act to deport migrants just because he wants to without first giving them two things. Number one, notice of their deportation. Rather than just kidnapping them from wherever they are, leaving their children stranded on the side of the road because mommy or daddy didn't have their papers, and more importantly, giving them a day in court. That's right. Due process for every person in the United States, just like it says in the Constitution of the United States. Or, in other words,
stop breaking the law, asshole!
And that's all I have to say about that. New episodes of This Week Again air every Sunday. You can follow me, Suzanne Posel, or the show, This Week Again, on social media platforms like Blue Sky, Threads, Insta, Facebook. We're always available for your listening pleasure on places like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Ta-der for now.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
These are difficult times. And if you believe in justice, progress, and democracy, the news you read and listen to can be pretty depressing. And that's why there's a new podcast called Good News for Lefties and America. Every day it features positive news stories for progressive listeners. Because no matter how disturbing the headlines might be, there's always hope we can build on for a better tomorrow. Good News for Lefties and America. Listen on this platform at goodnewsforlefties.com or wherever podcasts are heard.